I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
All right. Happy Wednesday. Happy Tuesday. Happy Thursday. What is up, everyone? I am your host, Charlie Shrem, and you're watching and listening another epic episode of Untold Stories, where together, twice a week, we get to dive deep with some of crypto's most influential leaders, Bitcoin's OGs, those who are around, those who truly understand what's going on today, last week, in the future, to truly understand how this movement came to be and where we're going and all the stories in between and all the fun people, all the information, all the learning that we're getting. It's so much fun to do. So thank you guys for joining me on another epic episode. And today, we're going to be joined by a new friend of mine, Bobby Zagata, who's the CEO of Bitstamp. He's down at Money 2020 right now. So if you can see his background, he's got a lot of stuff going on, but he's taking 45 minutes to give us kind of where the world is right now in terms of crypto and what people are building. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Great to be here.
Well, first, I actually want to, there was a story that I was going to talk about on yesterday's episode. I totally forgot to tell the listeners. So I want to start off with that. A friend of my wife's and I passed away like in 2017, and he had left some Bitcoin to his very, very close friend. And our friend knew he was, you know, unfortunately, he was like a big Bitcoin OG too. He was one of the first people to like leave Morgan Stanley in a very fashionable way. He'd like stormed out. I quit in like 2012, I think it was, and became like full-time Bitcoin. And he left some Bitcoin to his long partner, very close friend. And it was the private key was jarbled, the writing. We couldn't read it. There was a whole thing. And we couldn't figure out. And there's a guy, I talk about him on the show a lot, Dave from Wallet Recovery Services. And I just have to give him some props, because I was literally sitting just on the chair the other day and I got an email and it was like, "Hey, Charlie, just want to let you know that so-and-so's Bitcoin has finally been recovered." And I start crying. I'm like, 5 years later, 5 years, we forgot. And he was able to recover. They got it as part of the whole will thing. The Bitcoin was able to get to her. And, it's such a beautiful thing. It's such a beautiful, I just wanted to share it with everyone. It's such a beautiful story.
It's amazing. I'm getting choked up just thinking about it. I don't even know these people, but yeah, it's beautiful that your friend and his legacy got to finally, you know, make it to their destination. That's great.
Oh, it really is a beautiful thing. And, you talk about legacy. I think about him a lot. And, he's the reason that like so many people actually got into Bitcoin, some of the early people. And so it's really good to see that maybe his legacy will live on in that positive way. But you're the CEO of Bitstamp. You were the chief commercial officer over at my friend Jesse's company, Kraken. You worked at the CME group, so you really understand traditional markets in a huge way. But and you now understand the crypto world. You're at Money 2020 right now. Is there anything intriguing you? Is there anything that you're seeing right now? Any types of technologies that you're looking for? Are you looking at projects that are at certain stages in their markets? What is exciting you right now out there?
Yeah, well, there's so much interesting innovation going on. I don't have to tell you, Charlie, and we should talk about each and every one of them. But I'll be honest with you, the thing that I'm most excited about now is it's not actually the most cutting edge stuff. It's more, you know, enabling the blocking and tackling of the crypto ecosystem to reach further into the world, into the traditional financial services space, and into the rest of society. So, you know, I'm at Money 2020 in Amsterdam, as you mentioned, and you know this conference is full of fintechs and increasingly traditional financial services companies, and they are all trying to solve one problem, which is, what is our answer to crypto? You know, is this an opportunity? Is it a risk for these different platforms? What have you? And what's our angle? And they're not most of them. They're really just into enabling their customers to participate. It's not about you know the next most brilliant use case for the most interesting coin project or even NFTs at this conference. So anyway, what I'm very excited about is just bringing it further.
Because I live in the U.S. and although I travel a lot, not as much as I'd like to have in the past 2 years, because I live in the U.S., I look at and my listenership is like 51% non-U.S. Just so, and that's why I really love being able to do this, so you could talk to all these audiences. I'm you know, investing in Bitcoin and crypto and looking at Bitcoin and crypto and the companies from like a very American perspective, and I struggle with this. Like, I can't pull myself out of it sometimes, and I forget that like what really has brought this industry to where it is today is the global world. Like, you can almost remove America, the US, you know, from it, and the demand will still be there. In fact, it's very different. Like, people in these other places look at Bitcoin and crypto as completely differently than I would. Do you see that?
I do. And this is actually a real source of motivation for me too. So it plays out in a couple different ways. Yeah, that, you know, there's nuances between the US market and the European market and even parts of the Asian market, perhaps. But what's really interesting is in certain economies, you know, crypto is not purely recreational, right? It's not just an investment opportunity like a stock or something. It's a lifeline. It's literally a lifeline, because they live in a jurisdiction where they can't necessarily trust their institutions. You know, they can't trust their central bank and even their private banks from not getting them in trouble. So people, you know, and you know, everyone likes to pick on Venezuela or whatever, but you know, there's plenty of meaningful economies where people work their whole lives, they create value for themselves, and then it evaporates because their government can't manage the inflation, and they can't trust their central bank, and even their banks are questionable. So that's something that, you know, for you, I'm sure many of us in this space, you know, we really care about. We want to help solve so that people can have agency and have independence and not be so dependent on these institutions. If I could add just one more thing, Charlie, we recently at Bitstamp did a major survey, 28,000 respondents, and it was about trust in crypto and trust in cryptocurrency and the crypto ecosystem. And one of the things that came out of that survey in a very pronounced way is that, first of all, trust in crypto across all jurisdictions. We did the survey in 23 geographies, was higher than expected. But in developing economies, it was the highest. So Nigeria was the very highest trust for crypto. And I believe that's because they don't have as much trust in their traditional institutions.
Wow. And like, half my listeners are like nodding their heads saying, yeah, we know this. And the other half are like, wow, I never really thought about it this way. We've been, you know, you've been in the space a long time, working with like some really amazing ideological people who've gotten in the space very early. We've been like preaching this stuff for a while. And I think this year, especially like this year, we are at a point where we are at the edge of our seats waiting on what the central bankers are saying in meetings more than the presidents do. Like the Bank of England, the Federal Reserve Bank in the US, the Central Bank of Tokyo of Japan, like how our central banks on a very sensitive level are going, you know, pulling the levers of our economy for better or for worse. Like, I'm not even saying if it's good or bad, but it's like this year more than, and in my adult life, at least in anyone I've talked to, this is like since the 70s, at least, where it's like very, and it was a different world. It's like very, we're like at the edge of our seats, right? Like, we've never had this before.
Yeah, I know. It's quite amazing. And, you know, obviously I'm very aware of it in the US, but you're absolutely right in, you know, all of the, you know, really scaled economies of the world. This is a phenomenon, right? It's almost that the political kind of pecking order is being subverted a bit, and people, you know, are caring more about the decisions that impact their, you know, their ability to manage their wealth or their livelihood, versus many of the kind of political back and forth about peripheral issues. Well, I'm sure they're quite important issues, but the, let's say, less solvable societal issues that seem to just go back and forth on the political stage.
Politics, especially now during a lot of congressional elections that are happening in the next year and the presidential election, it's changing everything. But I want to flip a script. So let's go back in history a little bit. So Bitstamp, oh man, it's probably the world's longest running crypto company other than BitPay and blockchain.info. I can't think of any other company that's just still continuing to grow and be since 2010, 2011. I can't. And blockchain.info is like not doing the same thing that it used to do. And BitPay's still doing payment processing. Those guys, Tony and Steven, I mean, they need you know, like an award for just continuing to grow that, like the longest business. But Bitstamp. So I remember in 2011, I got invited with Eric Voorhees, Roger Ver, and Gavin Anderson to Austria, where I met Nathes for the first time, the founder, I think it was Damien too, of Bitstamp. And this was like the first time that anyone, like a business group, it was like just the 15 of us. Actually, the Bitcoin Foundation founding came from that meeting in a cafe in Austria. But the question I have is, how the hell is this company still around like 13 years later? How are you guys doing it?
Yeah. Well, I've got a few comments on that, and I would love to hear more about that cafe in Austria. That was where the magic started, I think. You know, I will say this, it is the longest running crypto exchange. And as a matter of fact, I spoke with Tony at BitPay today. He came by our booth at Money 2020, and we were joking about this because he said, actually, we, BitPay, started 1 month before Bitstamp. So he gets the ticket there. And to your point, they're just doing a great job just believing and chugging and adding merchants. So it was great to see him. For Bitstamp, you know, I can't say enough about the DNA that Nathes and Damien built into this company. You know, just the values that they kind of instilled and that still drive the company forward. And I'm so kind of psyched to be a part of it. And then also, I think the company just made some really good decisions along the way. And again, before I was here, I've just been here 10 months, but for instance, you know, they very early on invested in industrial strength technology. You know, they basically said, hey, we have great technology. It's great for retail investors and casual kind of hodlers, but for for those days that they could foresee that when Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan and jump trading and all of these guys are in the markets, we need industrial strength technology. So they partnered with NASDAQ a few years ago for matching technologies and others. I think that was a really pivotal kind of decision. And then the other thing I would point to that I think they did very, very well and we're still leveraging today is sounds cliche, but just customer focus and the desire to meet customers wherever they are. So I think some crypto companies are a little bit elitist when it comes to who they want to talk to, who they want to market to, who they want to serve. And Bitstamp is not that way. Bitstamp is, if you're brand new to the market or if you're OG, we can talk to you and serve you and work with you on any part of the spectrum. And that's true for institutions or for investors.
Customer service. When I can tell you every company that has died over the years that was once like the largest. Going back to Mt. Gox, every single one has just been, at some point in time, they stopped paying attention to their customer. It was the reason, one of the reasons BitInstant went down. My company, I'll definitely admit that. We couldn't keep up with the customer. I was doing it out of my basement. And then you have companies like Coinbase. Now it's like they're famous now. You can't get someone on the phone, although they've gotten a lot better with that. But the companies that focus on their customer support, it's such a simple thing. In fact, at that meeting, it was a funny story. At that same meeting, I was on my laptop doing customer support emails when Roger, who was my first investor in BitInstant, walked behind me and hit me on the back of the head. He was looking at my computer screen, hits me, and he goes, "You need to hire someone to do that now. Like, you shouldn't be doing that." And I was like, "What are you hitting me on the head for?" But he was right. So I shouldn't have been sitting there doing customer support emails, because you can't pay attention to every customer. That's the most important thing. Just one of our portfolio companies yesterday in our fund was talking to us about, they're like, "Yeah, we're growing, blah, blah, blah. But the only thing we have to focus on right now is our customers are complaining a little bit on customer support." Like, no, you need to drop everything and establish a phone number or a dedicated email address with a good ticketing system and guarantee response within like 48 hours or even sooner than that, because that will be the downfall of your company.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of companies in the crypto space, particularly in the US, they're kind of fashioned on a Silicon Valley tech company model. And in those models, when there's an issue, they don't want to talk to you. At Facebook or whatever, like you can't get to a person there. And that just doesn't work. Crypto, particularly if you're newer to the market, it's fairly complex. There's real risk attached to it. There's a lot of different ways you can participate. So a conversation is crucial, I think. So at Bitstamp, this is how we center our model on the ability to have a human conversation. Our stats say 22 seconds is the typical wait time to get to a person.
I still see a gap though, and this actually brings me to like a larger, potentially macro issue in where we are as an industry. Is that over the last 2 years, in that crazy like two bull markets, that kind of mini ones that we had in 2020, 2021, is that we tend to, as an industry, promise great things. And because we have tokens, people can speculate on the future value of these amazing, great technologies. But then when we can't service that customer and the user experience is not as good, that's where people lose. And that's where we get into bear markets. And that's when people dump their tokens and things like that. So like, how can we change that as an industry?
Yeah, well, I think to your point, first of all, making sure the customer support thing works and is properly prioritized or positioned by the company, right? So that I just couldn't agree more with what you said. If that's not prioritized, it's going to be, those companies aren't going to be sustainable, I think. But then the second thing is, you know, I think those of us who have been in the market for a period of time, you longer than me, but you know, for years, need to speak more about how to take advantage of all the phases of the different cycles. Obviously, that it's cyclical, and then how to take advantage of the cycle. So I remember I was at Kraken in 2019 or 2018, really end of 2018 when
dismal
things
times.
Really flattened out, and 2019, and you know, wow, I was very, very concerned about how to live with the uncertainty of not knowing, you know, at what point the markets would start cooperating again. And at that point it was Jesse, and I learned a tremendous amount from Jesse, but he had lived through a little bit more than I had. And, you know, it's that longer term perspective that I think benefits. So to answer your question, I think those of us who have been in the marketplace a little bit longer need to communicate more to those who are newer to the market to, you know, understand better how cycles work and understand better how markets operate in downturns and upturns. There's no such thing as a market that only goes one direction. It doesn't exist. So we have to make sure people understand how to manage for the long term, I think.
Yeah, I have a friend, every time I say, yeah, are we in a bear market? He goes, no, we just extended our permanent bull market.
Exactly.
It's just we're taking a break. It's just an extension. But these technologies...
From business perspective, I'm sorry.
No, what did he say?
I was going to say, you know, you say we're taking a breather, like Bitstamp and really all the companies in the space. You know, we all look at these bear markets as an opportunity to literally, you know, exhale and start building for the next, you know, the next adopt. It's obviously not welcomed when markets flatten out if you're an exchange, but it does enable us to make progress on product.
So let's talk about that, because that it always works. What you just said through so many bull and bear cycles, as long if you get out of the mentality of like, will crypto exist anymore, and start to say it will, it's just going through cycles. But in the early bear markets, that even 2017 to a lot of people were like, will this thing ever recover? Will crypto exist, or is it going by the way? Even nowadays. Obviously, the more people still believe that, the more opportunity there's going to be. And once the whole world realizes this technology, then the opportunities won't, you know, be there anymore. So I look at this all as an opportunity. But in like the larger, like macro kind of like where we are in this cycle, the only time that I've failed in that is timing. Timing is everything. Like starting the right company, the right product, when you launch your mainnet, if you do have a token, the relationship between everything, like how you build, when you launch, what type of market you want to get into. It's a hard thing to time. Like, it's forget about catch the falling knife, but like, when do you launch your project? Do you wait 6 months? Do you launch into a bear market? Everyone always has these questions about timing. And, you know, timing is everything. I'm trying to think of like specific examples, but almost every company that I know that's around today was launched during a bear market. So I guess my question to you is, if the larger macro world is obviously overhanging crypto, you got and crypto adoption. Obviously, if people don't have money if they're uncertain about their future income or they're uncertain about their future purchasing power, they're going to be less inclined to want to work in or for a risky industry and invest in a risky industry. So the macro world, I know I'm getting to a question, is all based on attitude right now of like central banks and the political world on crypto. And so it's like inflation is a big part of it. There's the war in Russia and Ukraine. And then there's like inflation and everything. I think a lot of those things will go away in the very near term. The attitudes, what's the attitude towards Bitcoin and crypto in Washington, D.C.? And I hate to use a specific example, but like, obviously, a lot of the world's regulatory environment follows the U.S. and things like that. So kind of where's the attitude right now? Has it changed? Are we going to see a difference in the elections that are coming up soon?
Yeah, great question. Here's my view of it. in 2021, you know, we or the crypto industry really crossed the threshold, I think, in people's consciousness from, is it going to be around to it's here. And now how do we deal with it, either from an investor standpoint or from a lawmaker standpoint or a regulator standpoint? So, and that's incredibly important. Proof points to me for this are things such as the executive order from President Biden. You know, that was not, I think it was very smartly the way they constructed that in a couple of ways. You know, firstly, it was not about, you know, explore the viability of this. It was very much about, study it and determine a framework to help manage it in a positive way. So, and I actually, that was meaningful to me that he didn't, or his team didn't try to rush the regulators. You know, you have 6 months to come up with a framework that we have to implement. No, he said, study it, because he wants to get it right. And I think he wants to get it right because of the importance of doing it right for competitiveness of the U.S. economy on the global stage. So if we get it wrong, if we get the regulatory framework and regime wrong, I think, you know, all that crypto kind of opportunity is going to go elsewhere, and the innovation that goes with it. So that, to me, is a proof point that we've crossed that threshold now, and it's more about how do we make the most of it.
It seems like stablecoins are in the front of everyone's minds, and I get why, because Tether is the biggest elephant in the room, and for better or for worse, right? It doesn't matter. Everyone likes other stablecoins versus others. You have Circle, USDC, then you have like the hybrid ones. We saw UST collapse. But there are still other companies that are trying, you know, Tron is trying to do their version of what UST was. So there's this whole, and that kind of backs the industry in a way. But if you remember, all the early trading pairs were against Bitcoin. So everything was against Bitcoin. So you trade any token that existed, even early Ethereum trading pair was against Bitcoin. And then it became against dollars. But then you have to trust like whose dollars, because dollars in one exchange is worth different, you know, dollars in Bitstamp have more value than dollars in, let's just say, like, like BTCE or Mt. Gox, because they collapsed and no one got their dollars out. So you have to create this stablecoin thing that could be moved from one place to the other. Are we going to see good, like, stablecoin regulations? Are we going to see like a way forward with our current stablecoins? Or is it going to be like the current ones that are out of compliance are going to have to shut down? I know it's specifically pointed questions, but you're one of the best people that I've talked to help answer them.
Yeah, my short answer is yes. We'll see regulation in this. I think it's an obvious area to do common sense, hopefully regulation, and it's clearly in the crosshairs from a legislative and a regulator standpoint in the U.S. And it makes sense. But stablecoins, to your point, play a really important function. They reduce so many frictions for investors and for traders, and it's just a genius thing that enables, you know, efficiency. However, people, you know, because they've become so big, just the scale of it is so
huge.
That's
what the scary thing is just how big it is.
Yeah. USDT and USDC and others. So yeah, people when they hold one or when they use one, they should have the understanding of what's behind it. And you know, for certain of them, that's very clear today. And for others, as you mentioned, it's not clear today.
Do you have other advice for folks starting projects and businesses now in terms of like how they should approach VCs, or do you guys invest in projects?
We do. We have a corporate development team, a small corporate development team that does strategic investments, both trying to foster innovation and also, trying to, create good investments for Bitstamp and good partnerships, basically.
You guys never lost your way, it sounds like. It's heartwarming because that, like, you never lost the reason why we're here in the first place. It's the reason I started this show, to almost like remind people of why people got excited about this Bitcoin thing in the very early days. It's probably one of the most disheartening things. It's why I still go to conferences a lot, just to see people and see the excitement again and things like that. And I know I asked you early on in the show, but you see, you when you're traveling outside of the world, do you still see a lot of that excitement from small meetups and groups and startups and are people launching projects with not just like whatever product they're building, but obviously are they doing it for the reasons? And are you guys investing in entrepreneurs that are doing things for those reasons? Are you pushing that same kind of ethos?
Yeah. I appreciate the way you characterize Bitstamp, and I think that's absolutely true. You know, we're mission driven. We're true believers. We really want this technology to fulfill the, you know, all the possibilities that created it. So we're still kids about it. We're still excited. We still get excited. Yeah. And to answer your question, yes. I mean, the best example for me is in Miami for the Bitcoin conference in April. That was even for me, who's been in the trenches in the industry for 4 or 5 years. That was really energizing because, first of all, it's just a massive conference, and but the excitement and the kind of collision of, there are a lot of established companies there. There's a lot of startups, literally like started up, you know, that month, seems like. And then just a lot of just retail enthusiasts all coming together. And it was truly energizing for us. But to answer your question, yes, I still think pound for pound, there's more innovation coming out of the crypto sphere than anywhere else in the world, on the planet, including AI or any other kind of key technology areas. And yeah, there's just no slowing down.
I love that term you used, colliding. I'll like title the show actually, like colliding traditional finance and DeFi or something like that. I like that term because it's not like we're like merging these worlds together. We're like colliding them together and shit breaks. But you come out with some really great things on the other side.
Definitely. That's how it feels.
I was having a conversation with someone about this yesterday, about kind of like watershed moments and collisions. And we're trying to like pinpoint specific moments. And these are like, you never find the answers because there's always more, but it's fun to have these conversations. You looked at like Ethereum as a big watershed moment because it was the first time like that we saw the demand and the ability to do like transactional assets on top of a blockchain, and that really changed everything with smart contracts. And I would argue, and so I was arguing that with someone, we were having the show about it too, that Uniswap was a huge moment because Uniswap was the first time that through you can have a decentralized type of real-time order book for small assets with liquidity pools and AMMs, you know, automated market makers and things like that. And I didn't understand any of those worlds until Uniswap had existed. When you probably heard about that, like Uniswap for the first time, it was probably blowing your mind because you had worked in these worlds of like futures and trading and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's on the one hand, truly exciting, the possibilities. I mean, when you start really getting into what's possible with a smart contract blockchain established, you know, society almost, the possibilities are endless, what could be accomplished and how efficiently it could be accomplished. However, as an exchange guy, you know, I've also had a moment of terror where you start to wonder, well, wait a sec, you know, where is the value for a centralized, governed, regulated, you know, entity in this equation? And I've come to, you know, appreciate both and having, you know, participating in both myself, there's, I think, plenty of room, right? to me, and what I tell people when asked is, it's today, it's just a different risk profile and a different value proposition, therefore. So the Uniswap or the core DeFi opportunity today, although it's still fast evolving, is different than it is on a centralized exchange or a different kind of marketplace where it's a little bit more transparent and regulated. But I think from an ecosystem perspective, it's awesome. Like, we need both. I'm curious to see where the innovation takes us.
One of the things that people have been trying to get pushed through is this like Bitcoin spot ETF to allow people in the US stock market to essentially buy pieces of Bitcoin with the lowest amount of like management fees. You have like Grayscale products and things like that, but a spot Bitcoin ETF would completely change the world for Bitcoin and crypto. It would lead the ways for potentially other ETFs and things like that. Given that we do have industry ETFs, the SEC has pushed back every year, every 6 months, calling our markets still too manipulated, although all markets are manipulated to some extent. Do you know, what do you feel about all that? Like, you know, being an exchange where people are spot trading, and in fact, your pricing data will probably have a relation with this ETF, I'm assuming. Like, how do you feel about all of that?
Yeah. Firstly, I think in many ways the crypto marketplace is the least manipulated in the world because it's available to all, right? You can have direct relationships. An exchange can have direct relationships with retail investors, brokers, banks, fintechs, professional traders, significant trading operations, and everybody is playing the same game in a transparent marketplace. And the traditional side doesn't necessarily operate that way. There's lots of gatekeepers and intermediaries, and not everybody has access like that. So I think it's in many ways the fairest. And then secondly, to your point, I believe that, from a crypto perspective, an ETF is necessary, right? So if you're really committed to adoption, just like regulation, regulation isn't the most fun thing in the world, but if you're really committed to adoption, then you're going to have regulation. You're going to have common sense frameworks that people can trust, that consumers who are not the early adopters can get comfortable with and trust. So I feel the same way about an ETF. An ETF is just a necessary piece to make it more available, more trusted, and therefore more adopted and more integrated into society. That's what I want.
I think it's the first time in like the history of financial markets where like, could you imagine how that would work? Like, so the gold ETF was created because like, well, I don't know why specifically, but in my mind, you have all these fractured gold markets, and how do you define like who's holding gold and how is that traded? So they created like a centralized institutional capital way of doing it. But with Bitcoin, you could argue that like the spot places are better. I mean, it's better to just go to Bitstamp. It's better to go to a retail site. But I understand why you need the ETF. So how would that work? Like, who would be the price discovery mechanism? Would it be the spot places? Who would have more volume?
Yeah. Well, no, it's a great question. And there's some microstructure and macrostructure questions that need to be handled. I personally think the spot exchanges are the price discovery mechanism. They're certainly have the requisite volume, participation, and depth, in terms of a marketplace. However, it's evolving. The derivative space continues to grow significantly. And it'll be interesting when and if there's an ETF to see how that evolves.
Oh man, and that would really, not only on that side, but also tokenized stocks will change the world too, because investing in the US stock market, it's not something that everyone can do. Even if you're American, you have to like open up accounts, have certain like, companies like Schwab and stuff, they have to approve you like through compliance. if you want to be like a foreign citizen, there's like tax ramifications, paperwork, bank accounts, is all this stuff. And then you got to be smart enough to invest in the right companies. And there's tax ramifications on when you sell, because most of the brokers are going to take your taxes out of it. If you're someone in like the real world out there who's trading crypto, the US stock market is beyond anyone's like thoughts. But imagine if on the other side, anyone can trade and invest in the world. Imagine if right now we had the ability to invest in companies in other places. You'd have like jurisdictions you'd have jurisdictions fighting to be the best like places to host these things. Like countries would make their legal structures faster. Like it would really make the whole playing field completely even. This is the type of stuff that gets me excited about still being in Bitcoin and crypto today.
Yeah, it's cool. We almost need a global marketplace for marketplaces, like to see where the business flows to. But you know, you're absolutely right. It's quite amazing how important I think it is on the political agenda and on the, you know, from the standpoint of citizens to make sure that, you know, whatever jurisdiction you're in has a strong, reliable economy, but also that it's now a global game. So it's a little bit competitive. We can't just think about ourselves in the US or again, in whatever jurisdiction you're in. We have to think about the globe and how we're going to show up and, you know, how we're going to do the best for our citizens and our best for the world. So it's wide open right now. And I think getting really interesting. And by the way, I mentioned this survey earlier, this Bitstamp survey that we did, that was quite broad. And one of the things that startled me is for most respondents, the level of trust in crypto as an investment is approaching that of equities. It's a couple points away from their level of trust in equities as an investment. And it's even higher than like options and some other kind of derivatives type investments. So, you know, to your point, this is not like, two separate ways to invest or two separate kind of concepts. They're coming together.
I just actually went on your website, and those who are listening, go to bitstamp.net/crypto-pulse and you can access the report right there. I just downloaded it. I mean, that's free information right there to help me get a leg up on anyone else. If you're investing or buying anything, like this is, thank you so much for that. And thanks for taking some time out of your day and your travels and talking to us. And I really appreciate it. Bobby Zagata, CEO of Bitstamp. If you've not used Bitstamp, then you've been living under a rock, because it's one of the oldest companies around. Enjoy it. Thank you guys for still doing what you do. And I hope to talk to you again in next year so we can hear how things have changed.
Great, Charlie. Thanks for being here. Love to talk about this stuff.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP439267V1.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.